Baseball is in full swing. NBA playoffs are heating up, and your NFL team is gearing up for training camp. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
7:14, Tommy Tucker, WWL, anxious to get back to David Schultz, our friend, guest, professor of political science at Hamline University. So, David, let's start all over. Good morning. How are you?
Sure. Good, good. So, I'll apologize for our lousy internet provider.
Nah, that's all right. It's not your fault. So, tell me about the Electoral Vote Count Act. What is that? And then we'll talk about the politics of it.
Sure. Okay, so what happened is after the Civil War, there were two elections, 1876 and then I believe 1888, in which there were serious disputes regarding electoral votes in states, where a whole bunch of problems of corruption, et cetera, and also in a situation where candidates did not have enough electoral votes to actually win the presidency, because you need the majority to win. And so Congress was basically passed a law to try to figure out how to address the disputes regarding, let's say, contested electoral votes. And what was supposed to be in that process, in that law, was a process for how they reviewed real disputes regarding electoral votes, which is involving one senator, one House member saying, we think there's a problem, and then a Congress goes, looks at and decides how to resolve the
dispute. Let me jump in, because these are different state elections. Are you talking about one member of the state House and state Senate?
Or one member of Congress.
Congress,
one
okay.
member of the U.S. House. What it called for is that when the electoral votes were then sent to Congress for the final tabulation.
Gotcha.
If there was some reason why one member of the U.S. House of Representatives and one senator said, yeah, we think there's a problem with a particular state, there was a process for trying to sort all this out. But what should have been clear in the act, and this is really what the current legislation is about, is that Congress only gets to act, A, if there's a genuine dispute, and B, Congress, for the most part, does not have any role in the electoral votes unless there's not a candidate has not won a majority of the electoral vote.
All right. Now, when you say genuine, that to me seems like a subjective word. How do you codify that?
Well, how do you codify it? Again, there has to be a member of both the one member of the U.S. Senate and one member of the House who both object when they're doing the final. I'm not even going to call it a counting or anything. Maybe counting is the only word I can use.
That's the way it stands now, David?
It stands it now. Is that Congress just counts the electoral votes as they were certified by the states? They come in, and if there is enough for there to be a majority of the electoral votes for somebody to win the presidency, then it's over. Then it's all over at that point. If there's some objection by one senator and one House member, then there's a procedure for how to resolve the dispute with that particular election. So what's the check built into the process? The check is there's got to be member of the House, member of the Senate object, and then the entire Congress has to look at and determine whether the objection is valid.
The reason I asked about genuine, because that is a subjective term and then can be manipulated politically, I guess. What would the new bill call for and change?
The most important thing the new bill would do was to make absolutely clear that Congress does not have the authority to reject electoral votes from states if they have been certified by their state. Essentially, what it does is to say what the Constitution already does say, is that Congress has no role in picking the president or vice president of the United States unless, this is in the Constitution, unless no candidate receives a majority of the electoral vote, then there's a procedure outlined. So in many ways, what the Electoral Vote Count Act revision that's before Congress is doing is really clarifying what most of us thought was already the case and basically restating what the Constitution already says.
So what about the politics of it? Who would be against this if the Constitution already says it, especially if you're a fundamentalist, right?
Well, if you're a fundamentalist, you should be supporting this revision.
That's what I'm thinking.
Because, yeah, exactly, because it's I don't want to quite say it's just restating the Constitution, but it's restating the Constitution. But what's really odd about this is that the people who are most opposed to it, I'm going to say, are the hardcore Trump supporters, people who believe that the election was stolen and try to encourage the vice president 2 years ago to act in a way to say, I'm going to nullify the electoral votes or I'm going to reject it. It also makes clear this act, I should point out, that the vice president has no more than a ceremonial role. You know, I'm trying to think of what, a master of ceremonies or something like that.
Like a game show host.
A game show, yeah, where we read and say, and the winner
is. Actually, no, because there's no competition. Because this would be Steve Harvey. He's just reading the results that the judges give him, right?
Exactly.
And hopefully getting it right.
Right, and the judges are already the states in terms of having gone through canvassing boards, having gone through certifications, maybe having gone through litigation. And so all this information, the states have to send to Congress a statement that says, here is the slate of delegates here for the Electoral College in our state. Here is how they voted. And so all Congress does is, I don't know, they count. And somebody gets to 270 electoral votes. We got a winner, and that's it. So it clarifies the absolute minimal role that Congress has. And again, I want to underscore that nothing in the Constitution, nothing in the original Electoral Count Act, and this act reinforces it, says that Congress gets to second guess what the states have done in their elections.
All right, let's take a break. When we come back, we'll talk about the politics of it, because again, it seems as if you're a fundamentalist and you believe in the Constitution, that you would want this to pass, but yet not all Republicans are behind it. 720 now, traffic, WWL. All right, Tommy Tucker, WWL, 725, talking to our friend David Schultz, professor of political science at Hamline University, about the Electoral Vote Count Act. Now, where do the politics of this come down? Because it seems like it's all about former President Trump and not necessarily Republicans. This is, you know, the elephant in the room. This is about President Trump. If he runs again and loses, those that would be opposing this bill would be in Trump's camp and would be hedging their bets in case he runs and loses. Is that just obvious, and that the senators that are supporting this, Mitch McConnell, Rob Portman, and the others, are just adhering to the Constitution? I know there are people, let me save them time right now. If you believe the election was stolen, you're entitled to your opinion. You can believe whatever you want. I'm not going to argue that with you. I'm just talking to David here about the political ramifications, or at least who's behind what on this bill. So go ahead, David.
Well, I think you're exactly correct here, is that the people who are opposed to the bill are really the Trump people. And I like your division here. It's not necessarily even Republicans. It's Trump people who do believe that the election was stolen and are hoping that if the ex-president runs again, that they can somehow, even if he does lose, they can now get Congress to step in and nullify close states, maybe like Georgia, maybe like Wisconsin or Michigan and Pennsylvania, and throw the election to him. But if you're a strict constructionist, if you sort of take seriously, you know, what the Constitution says, you should be supporting this bill. In fact, I'd almost go to the point of saying that if you're really a strict constructionist, the bill really isn't necessary, or none of the bills were necessary, because there should be no role for Congress outside of, again, being the, you know, the master of ceremonies or announcer for what the state results are. So it's an odd alignment at this point in terms of the fact that you've got Democrats, I'm going to say strict constructionist Republicans. And I think the other odd part about it here is that for many people who are saying, well, the federal government has too much power, Congress is too powerful, if you oppose this act, you're basically saying Congress gets to stomp all over what states get to do. And I don't know, there's a lot of Republicans out there who believe that, what, states, you know, should have a little bit more authority, and the feds should keep their nose, and Congress should keep their nose out of certain things.
Real quick, the Supreme Court's back in session first Monday in October, right? What are some of the things they'll be looking at this session, David? Because I know you teach law as well, don't you?
I do. Yes, correct. So there's several big cases out there. One of them is going to be on the status of affirmative action in college admissions, for example. Another is going to be the scope of the Environmental Protection Agency and regulating wetlands. Another big issue is going to be all about what role state courts have in terms of policing elections. And then we're going to have another case all about LGBTQ rights in terms of whether or not an individual who's running, I think, a graphic art design can be required to produce graphic arts for a gay couple's wedding. So it's a lot of big stuff this term, big cases, but I would say race, affirmative action, the power of the federal government to regulate the environment are really the core issues that are going to be coming up this coming term.
And for the most part, the way the court functions, they hear all of these things, but then they rule in June, correct, for the most part?
For the most part, correct. And they're supposed to issue opinions, you know, orders with full opinions. But as we've learned in the last few years, oftentimes they're kind of taking shortcuts and just issuing orders without explaining what they're doing. That's called the shadow docket. And those come at any time. But you're right. Most of what they do should probably hit the news sometime in, let's say, May and June.
We only have 30 seconds left. I have a listener that constantly chides me via email because I thought there would be an investigation after the leak of the Roe v. Wade thing. Has there ever been any investigation into that at all?
Supposedly there was, and Chief Justice Roberts, who's the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, indicated recently that he's never been able to figure out who the leak was. There's not that many people who have access to opinions.
It shouldn't
have been that hard to figure out. So I'm kind of puzzled myself.
Room of suspects pretty small on that one. Thank you. I appreciate your time. David, have a good day.
Stay with you. Bye.
When we come back, we'll talk about the Mid-Barataria sediment diversion. 7:30 time for WWL First News. For that, we go to Ian Ozan.
Hey, Rob Bradford here. I have set out on a mission with my good friends at FanDuel to prove what I have known for some time. Baseball isn't boring. Now I have a daily podcast to prove it with some of the most notable people in the baseball world screaming baseball isn't boring from the mountaintops, or at least agreeing to come on our show. Players, managers, GMs, and yes, even the commissioner of baseball, Rob Manfred. It has been a constant wave of baseball's most powerful voices. So join the revolution. Subscribe and soak in Baseball Isn't Boring. Listen on your Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. You'll be glad you did.